What's a real man? In your mind, is a true man supposed to be unemotional and tough? It's a common stereotype and one that's as damaging to men as it is to women. A more authentic and hopeful picture of masculinity is on offer in the new book, Men's Work, a practical guide to face your darkness, end self-sabotage, and find freedom by Connor Beaton. Connor is an entrepreneur, speaker, and the founder of Man Talks, an international organization dedicated to the personal growth of men. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, my name is Connor Beaton, and I'm going to be talking about a few big ideas from my book, Men's Work, a practical guide to face your darkness, end self-sabotage, and find freedom. I wrote this book because in our current culture and time, there's a lot of conversation about how men need to do the work, how men are struggling and suffering. And we can see this, right? We can see that the rates of men going to university and college are dropping significantly. We can see that the rates of men under the age of 30 living at home are increasing significantly. We can see that men's mental health states and suicide rates are up, that overdoses are up. And so in the book, I talk about a few of the things that we as men can do and that everyone can sort of point to that will support men. And the first one is the notion of the plague of absent fathers. So in the book, I talk about how the reality that most men, many men will grow up in is that they will have grown up without any significant father figure or male figure within their life. In fact, in America alone, roughly one in four children will grow up in a household without a father figure, without a dad around. And the impact of that is quite substantial, right? So 63% of youth suicides, as an example, are from fatherless homes. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes, which is 32 times the average. 85% of all children who show behavioral disorders come from fatherless homes. And 71% of all high school dropouts also come from fatherless homes. So we can see very clearly that not having a father, not having a male figure present in the house is quite detrimental, specifically to young boys and young men. And after having worked with men for over a decade, I've seen this to be true in many ways, shape, or form. And in the book, I talk about how an absent father isn't just a father who is completely absent from your life. It can be that you only see your father once or twice a month, like I did, and I talk about in the book. It can be that your father is present, but he's a workaholic or an alcoholic, or he's addicted to some substance or drug. It can be that he's there, but he's abusive, or he is there, but he's emotionally absent. So there's many different forms of an absent father, and the impact of that is very real. The next concept that I talk about in the book that is very prevalent throughout the book is the concept of shadow work. The shadow work is a concept that was created by a Swiss psychoanalyst named Carl Jung back in the early 20th century. And shadow work is the act of being able to turn towards the aspects, traits, behaviors, parts of ourselves that we don't like, that we don't want other people to know about, that we want to avoid or reject about ourselves. And after having worked with men for over a decade, I've found that shadow work is one of the single greatest tools that a man can begin to cultivate. Because for many men within our culture, we've been taught that there is strength in suppression, that if we can just avoid things hard enough and long enough and stuff them deep enough within us, that eventually that will solve some of our problems. But what it actually does is feed our problems. It actually ends up turning into the very thing that is sabotaging us. So shadow work guides men in the book in a very tactical and practical sense towards understanding the things that they've been avoiding, whether that's childhood abuse, whether it's the pain from abandonment, whether it's the grief from a heartbreak, whether it's their insecurities or their perceived inferiorities. And being able to work with these parts that naturally reside within us that might be causing chaos and havoc within our relationships or our career or our mental health. The next concept is something that I've called the law of isolation. And the very simple breakdown of the law of isolation is that isolation equals amplification. So the notion that when you isolate, you amplify the problem, not solve it or solution it. Yet this is something that many of us as men turn towards when something is challenging or taxing within our relationship, within our finances, within our mental health or emotional health. Many of us will actually turn towards isolating ourselves, right? You can see this in a lot of relationships. A couple gets into a fight and the man will shut down. Maybe he'll leave the apartment or the house, or he'll just shut down and not communicate, express what's going on within him. And that isolation actually feeds the problem. It feeds whatever he's experiencing internally. So if that man is feeling angry or rejected, or he's feeling neglected in some way, shape, or form, or misunderstood, that isolation will actually amplify his internal experience, or it'll amplify the perceived problem in the relationship. And so I talk about how we as individuals, how we as men can move away from this sort of Lone Ranger, Marlboro Man solution that many of us have been pitched, this notion that just avoid, just ignore, just isolate yourself, and you'll be able to deal with the problem. The next concept that I talk about in the book is what I refer to as the myth of male vulnerability. So again, our modern culture and the modern narrative, the mainstream narrative is that men are struggling, right? Men are in decline in some capacity. And you can kind of see this. We can see this in the data. We can see that, you know, young boys are struggling within the education system. Their grades are doing significantly worse than young girls. We can see that less men are graduating from college, less men are entering into the workforce. We can really see that there are a lot of challenges that men are facing within our modern culture. And the solution that's being proposed to men is that they just need to be more vulnerable. And while there is merit in being vulnerable, there's also a risk, an inherent risk that men know that they embark on or undertake by being vulnerable, right? So if a man is vulnerable in his relationship or at work or with his friends, there is the knowledge that he's risking rejection, abandonment, ostracization, being rejected from that circle, that social environment, or that relationship. And so this vulnerability as the solution or the cure-all to all of men's problems is a fallacy. And there's a few things that I talk about in the book that are very important. Number one is the when, how, and to whom you actually share really matters. Because what happens for a lot of men is that when they decide to open up, when they actually decide to be vulnerable and talk about what they're experiencing or struggling with, sometimes it can come out sideways where they just sort of bring everything, all their problems, all their challenges, and sort of emotionally vomit on their partner in their relationship or with one person in their life and turn that person into their emotional processing center, right? Sort of outsourcing their internal process, what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, onto somebody else in the hopes of getting some form of external feedback or approval or praise or recognition. The second thing is that some men aren't struggling with vulnerability, with not being vulnerable enough. That's maybe a misnomer. Some men are actually struggling with competency and feeling capable enough in their life. So for some men, it's not that they need to be more vulnerable with the people that are surrounding them in order to cure what ails them, whether it's their anxieties or insecurities or their fears or their depression. Some men are actually battling with feeling woefully incompetent, not having the skills or the traits that they know are going to add value to their relationship, to their community, to their family, to their friends. And men inherently want to be able to contribute. They want to have a place in their relationship or in their social circle or in their society, right? In some ways, men want to feel needed and necessary. And so the myth of male vulnerability tells men that if you're just more vulnerable, all of your problems will be solved. But when in actuality, some of what many men are actually experiencing is that they don't feel competent enough to contribute in a meaningful and valuable way. And so if they're just vulnerable and talk about how they don't feel like they fit in, or that they don't feel competent, or that they feel insecure, that doesn't actually solve the problem of what they're experiencing, when what they actually need to do is go out and train themselves in some type of skill or develop a certain attribute that they can bring into a relationship or a work environment that will actually allow them to feel more capable, more competent, and more contributive to that environment. Now, the last thing I talk about, well, there's many other things I talk about, but one of the last concepts, the big ideas that I talk about in the book, is a man's relationship to pornography. And I actually talk about moving past pornography. And I tried to talk about this, which is a very sensitive subject, because a lot of people get into debates about whether porn is morally good or bad, socially good or bad, individually good or bad. And I tried to look at this from the perspective of, what if you're a man, not having a debate or discussion about whether pornography is good or bad, but what do you do if you are a man who wants to move past using pornography, which many men do, and you can see this online with a lot of movements and conversations that are happening, where men are wanting to stop using pornography or have realized that pornography is maybe being used in an unhealthy way in their life. So in the book, I talk about the concept that porn is a supernormal experience. And all that that means is above normal. So as an example, when you eat a Thanksgiving dinner or a holiday dinner, for the most part, what we do is we are consuming more than we would normally consume, right? More calories, more content, and we're actually taking in more. Our system, our body, our stomachs are actually taking in more than we would normally eat. And porn is a very similar experience, where your brain and your body, your sexual body, is actually taking in more stimulus, more data, more information, more arousal than it would normally take in, right? Because you have access to pretty much anything that you could dream of, right? Just a click away. So this supernormal experience can be quite detrimental if it's used on a regular basis. So what a lot of men are finding is that when they're using pornography as their main sort of staple for their sexual diet, that it can actually alter their expectations of their sex life, and it can diminish their sexual connection with their partner, and it can have a net negative impact on their sexual relationships. The other thing that I talk about is that the notion that porn for many men has become a tool or a default mechanism that they unconsciously used to regulate and calm their internal state. So many of the men that I've worked with over the years, what they'll describe is that sometimes and oftentimes they're watching pornography not because they're aroused, but because they're bored, or they're anxious, or they're nervous, or they are angry, or they're frustrated, or they feel lonely, or they feel rejected or embarrassed. And they don't want to feel that state. And porn is just the natural thing that they turn to that allows them to feel better, because on the other side of watching porn, on the other side of ejaculation, is a dopamine hit where you naturally feel better. And so a lot of men are using porn as a means to regulate their internal state, to shift away from the feeling of not good, you know, the feeling of anger or frustration or aloneness or anxiety or stress or overwhelm, etc. So I provide very tactical and practical tools that I have used with thousands of men over the years to help them let go of porn and to help them embrace their own sexual body, their own sexual arousal, in a way that will allow them to more fully feel fulfilled within the context of their intimate relationships.
Thank you, Connor. That was 5 big ideas from Men's Work, a practical guide to face your darkness and self-sabotage and find freedom, by Connor Beaton. For more big ideas, listen to our book bite for Of Boys and Men, Why the Modern Male is Struggling, Why It Matters, and What to Do About It by Richard Reeves. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.